So obviously, I want to be really careful and not say that, you know, the people who supported Trump's actions are comparable to the brutal Myanmar military. I would never say that.
The military made its move in the early hours of the morning, detaining Myanmar's democratically elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other senior figures from the ruling party.
But I will say that given this theme that Biden has pursued of promoting democracy and the authoritarian moves that Trump made,
events in Washington have taken a violent and tumultuous turn in the past few hours, as thousands of supporters of President Trump stormed the U.S. Capitol building, venting their anger at the victory of Joe Biden in the presidential election.
They don't represent us. They need to pay the ultimate price for their crime.
In the bigger, grander scheme of promoting democracy.
We've learned again that democracy is precious. Democracy is fragile. And at this hour, my friends, democracy has prevailed.
There is, you know, a something of a comparison, but it's very sensitive. And so it's the type of thing where I would be hesitant to go too far with it.
Would you say this is the first big test of Biden having to put action behind words when it comes to democracy, when it comes to unity on the world stage?
Yes. And it's interesting because, you know, I think a lot of people thought the first big crisis was going to be Iran. And instead, it's Myanmar.
I'm Jeremy Siegel. This is Politico Dispatch. And today, Nihal Tusi on the crisis in Myanmar and the political forces shaping President Biden's response.
Both of the main parties in this election are fronts for the military junta that's ruled Myanmar, also known as Burma, since 1962.
Myanmar is a country next to China that was ruled for decades by a military junta.
Last time Burma had an election, 20 years ago, the pro-democracy candidate Aung San Suu Kyi won in a landslide. But the generals ignored the result and put her under house arrest.
Over the past 20 years or so, they have engaged in a democratization process that has transferred a lot of power, but not all power, to civilians.
Aung San Suu Kyi and the people of Myanmar have waited 25 years since the last free election in their country to get to this point today. And the NLD, the National League for Democracy, her party, has won that crucial majority to take the government.
In recent years, it has tried to turn into a democracy.
I am very honored to be here at this university and to be the first president of the United States of America to visit your country.
And the United States really encouraged that, partly because it wanted to draw Myanmar out of China's orbit of influence.
I came here because of the importance of your country. You live at the crossroads of East and South Asia. You border the most populated nations on the planet.
But there was an election recently, and the military, which, despite the transition to democracy, has still had a lot of power, has been unhappy with the results.
The first official results are trickling in from Myanmar's general elections, giving three parliamentary seats to Aung San Suu Kyi's National League for Democracy.
Celebrations at the NLD headquarters, as early indications showed the ruling party in the lead in Myanmar.
It believes that the civilians did too well, essentially. And so it has staged a coup. It's detained numerous civilian leaders. And it has declared a one-year state of emergency.
Developing overnight, Myanmar's military has seized control of the country, detaining its top civilian leaders. The military declared a state of emergency, claiming it has taken control of the country in response to what it's calling election fraud.
This has always been an issue in Myanmar, like even throughout this democratization process. You know, they call it a transition to democracy, but it never actually reached democracy.
A new UN report is calling on the international community to cut ties with Myanmar's military and the companies it controls and relies on.
For instance, the military retained control of key ministries. The military also did not answer to civilian rule. And I should add, you know, that includes by committing major human rights abuses and atrocities that some say are genocide.
It accuses the military of using the wealth of its vast business holdings to help fund atrocities against ethnic groups. It refers in particular to the military's genocidal intent against the Rohingya minority.
And so, yeah, I mean, the idea that they just can't let go of power, I mean, what's the old saying? Power corrupts, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Yeah, it definitely could have been seen as coming.
This is the first major foreign policy challenge of the Biden administration. And you wrote that this crisis challenges the very heart of President Biden's vision for foreign policy. Can you explain that to me?
Well, first of all, I'm going to disagree. I don't think this is the first major foreign policy crisis they face, because I think that the coronavirus pandemic is a foreign policy crisis. So I would argue that it's not the first. But I understand where you're coming from on that. How does it strike at the heart of Biden's promises on foreign policy? He promised to stand up for democracy. He promised to stand up for human rights around the world. And he also promised to stand up to China. And one of the things that makes Myanmar complicated is that it has long been in the orbit of China. And one of the reasons the U.S. has encouraged democratization in Myanmar, which is also known as Burma, is to draw it out of China's orbit. And now these developments make it seem like it will just simply draw closer to Beijing.
So how does the Biden administration handle this?
Well, they're trying to figure out what to do. And there's some debates. I mean, there's a debate as to whether even call it a coup. The administration hasn't called it a coup yet. They're trying to figure out whether to immediately impose sanctions or whether to send like diplomats to try to do some shuttle diplomacy and get the generals to back off. President Biden has said they're going to review the sanctions authorities and suggesting that, you know, he will impose some sanctions at some point. There's also efforts to coordinate with U.S. allies and partners, including in Europe and in Asia. And, you know, presenting a united front is a really powerful thing in this if the United States can pull it off. And seeing as Biden has promised to act multilaterally and to engage U.S. allies and partners, this is actually a really good opportunity for him to live up to that promise.
You mentioned that a big part of this conflict is China and how military rule means more influence from China. Just a week ago, China's President Xi Jinping warned against escalating tensions with the U.S., warned against a second Cold War. Is that part of the calculation for Biden's team here and part of the tension of figuring out whether to impose sanctions and what sort of action to take?
I definitely think that the role of China is a big one that people at the State Department and the National Security Council are considering. At the same time, they made promises on the campaign trail that they would stand up for democracy, that they would fight for human rights. And if you actually don't stand up in this case, it looks like you're bowing to China. So it's just hard to see how they can avoid doing something to express the U.S. displeasure. But remember, you don't have to do these things in binary ways. You can, you know, you can do sanctions and take other steps to try to work with the Chinese or Myanmar on affecting change in a positive direction. It's not either or necessarily. And that's sometimes hard for a lot of people in the foreign policy world to remember.
For someone observing this all from afar, for a person in the U.S. who's, you know, feeling the pandemic right now at home here and wondering why we have a place in this international crisis, why we have to have a role in this all, what do you say to them here?
It's actually a really good question. I mean, do we have huge interests in Myanmar? I think in the context of the overall, you know, rise of authoritarianism, rise of China, that sort of thing, yeah, we do have interests on that level. But do we have actual U.S. interests in Myanmar? Well, let me put it this way. I don't think the U.S. is going to be sending troops there anytime soon to do anything. It's probably just going to be sanctions and a lot of rhetoric and talk and diplomacy. One thing that's interesting about this conflict is that there's strong bipartisan support in Washington, in Congress, for being tough on the Myanmar military. Already you're seeing Republicans and Democrats working together to come up with sanctions packages because there is a lot of bipartisan support for promoting democracy in Myanmar. So in a sense, this is actually a really good opportunity for the Biden administration to work with Republicans in like a whole of government response. And that is one really interesting aspect of this crisis.
Nihal Tusi, thanks so much for talking with me.
Of course, thank you.
Also, today, the Senate is set to vote on confirming two members of President Joe Biden's cabinet. Alejandro Mayorkas is Biden's nominee to head up the Department of Homeland Security. Mayorkas served as DHS Deputy Secretary during the Obama administration and is one of the chief architects of the Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals immigration program. His confirmation was set for yesterday, but because of a snowstorm, was rescheduled for today. The same day, senators will vote on Pete Buttigieg, the former South Bend, Indiana mayor and former presidential candidate tapped to lead the Department of Transportation. Buttigieg's confirmation is set for noon and Mayorkas for 2:30. And in what's likely to be a blockbuster hearing, the CEO of the stock trading app Robinhood is expected to testify before a House committee later this month as lawmakers dig into the firm's role in the tumultuous trading of GameStop stock. That's according to people familiar with the matter. The hearing comes after Robinhood decided to stop its customers from buying GameStop stocks last week when traders on Reddit grouped together against Wall Street hedge funds betting against the company and sent shares skyrocketing. Once Robinhood stopped people from buying, GameStop shares plummeted, drawing criticism from lawmakers on both sides of the aisle. Now, CEO Vlad Tenev is expected to appear before the House Financial Services Committee on February 18th. Chair Maxine Waters and other Democrats are vowing to investigate what role Wall Street hedge funds may have played in the move to halt trading. Subscribe to Politico Dispatch wherever you get your podcasts. And if you want to help us out, leave us a rating and review in your favorite podcast app. You can also let me know directly what you think, good or bad, on Twitter. My handle is @JerSiegel. I'm Jeremy Siegel. Thanks for listening.